Welcome to the Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We're broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is September 12, 2019. Saints, the world is in turmoil. Most just don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice for Yeshua tonight. If you need help after the program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, number, prayer request, and or message. Phone number, of course, 620-878-4682. In an emergency, text my cell phone first, 316-619-4886. The text is because of all the robocalls. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news, Wichita Mission Church radio program archives, contact information, all at our ministry hub, which is very simply prophecyhour.com. That's prophecyhour.com. Remember, folks, we are a national satellite radio program which simulcast live on the net internationally. It's on YouTube. It's on some FM stations, so pray about sporting airtime. On another note, let's thank our listener base that is worldwide in places like Paris, France, Amman, Jordan, Singapore, Kingston, Jamaica, Davao City, Philippines, and of course, cities in good old United States such as Seattle, Washington, San Diego, California, Henderson, Nevada, and Charlotte, North Carolina. This week, Wichita, Kansas is a larger group of listeners to our radio programs, at least when they podcast later tonight. Follow us and share us at Twitter. That's Pastor Dan Catlin at Brant77. Now a prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest, and you're really going to need to listen to this program. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray, Father, I just pray radio goes according to your will, Father, and not our will, Father. Let everything go out rightly so that we can bless you and bless the people. In Yeshua HaMashiach's mighty name, amen and amen. Well, okay, folks, we've been keeping you updated to any developments might concern the rebuilding of the temple and keeping our eyes on Jerusalem. So the question today I bring to you is, have the treasures been rescued from Solomon's temple, been located? That's a big question. Along with this, you find Netanyahu says that after the Israeli election, he wants to annex the Jordan Valley. Is there a connection? Well, we'll find out, I think. Today, we bring on with us Jim Barfield. He's the director of the Copper Scroll Project, and Jim is a retired criminal investigator with multiple career positions leading up to his retirement from the Lawton, Oklahoma Fire Department in the August 2005. And, of course, we want to thank him for his service. So, Jim, are you there with me?
Yes, I am. How do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you just perfectly fine. You're coming over great. So, amen. I'm really glad to have you on today, and I have watched all your videos and such. But a lot of people out here might not even know what the Copper Scrolls are all about. So I guess that's the best place to start. What are the Copper Scrolls?
Well, it's actually just one scroll. The scroll was literally made out of copper. It's about 1 foot wide, and it's about 7 feet long. In other words, there are three sections of thinly beaten or rolled copper that each section is about 2.5 feet long. So you add all the sections up and they riveted them together. But whenever you rivet metal together like that, whether it's aluminum, whether it's copper or thin sheets of iron, it doesn't matter. Once you start pressing letters into it, it makes it very rigid. It's like folding a piece of paper. You know, you can stand it up and it'll stand on its side, but if it's not folded, it'll roll up and fall to the floor. Well, that's what they did, is they riveted this thing together, and they wrote the most amazing instructions ever. These instructions lead you to locations that contain massive, massive quantities of gold, silver, gems, and most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, items from the tabernacle and the temple. And I believe that with all my heart. And that also it has, there's going to be documents that are going to be along with this, to include documents from Haggai, documents from Jeremiah. There's just going to be a lot of information there that everyone, I mean, just what you were talking about a minute ago, this is end time stuff, guys. And for a guy like me, an average guy from Oklahoma, to have figured out the most mysterious Dead Sea Scroll ever, it doesn't make sense. But a lot of people tell me, and I'll speak at a lot of congregations and conferences, they tell me, well, that God uses the foolish to confound the wise. Well, I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I take it as that, because I have been honored, and I truly believe that God has honored me by allowing me to see these things. I was a very good investigator, no brag, just fact. I was Investigator of the Year for Oklahoma, and I was Investigator of the Year for internationally, so worldwide. So I was pretty good at it. But, guys, I am not good enough to have figured out something like this as quickly and as thoroughly as I did. And I'll tell you more about that after I wait for your next question.
Okay. I understand what you mean about that. But that is really how the Father works. In fact, there's a man by the name of Vindell Jones. You might touch on who he is, but didn't he tell you something like there was more prophecy in it than any of the other Dead Sea Scrolls?
And
for for the record, folks, this is connected to the Dead Sea Scroll. Back to you. Go ahead.
Everything we're going to be talking about tonight is connected to the Dead Sea Scrolls. And yes, Vindell Jones, I accidentally met him, and it's a kind of a long story, and I won't go into it. But it was a miraculous story. A lady in Israel teaching on the Israel National Radio saw my name on there. She said hi to me, saw my name where it said Jim Apache, okay, which means Jim from Apache, Oklahoma. She lived 3 miles away from me. And she was teaching through Bethel out of Israel. It was Israel National Radio. And she lived 3 miles from me. She lived one block away from my son and a block and a half away from my daughter in their neighborhood. It was incredible. And she introduced me to Vindell Jones. Vindell invited me to his home, and he began, I wanted to talk about, you know, Dead Sea Scrolls, but all he wanted to talk about, which was great, was a copper scroll. I had read the copper scroll years ago, and I was bored to tears. There was nothing prophetic about it. There was nothing exciting about it. It was just gold and silver, and I didn't care about that. I wanted biblical prophecy and,
right,
you know, educational stuff, biblical education. Guys, I was wrong. That copper scroll, Vindell told me, he said, Jimmy, that copper scroll's got more prophecy in it than any of the other Dead Sea Scrolls. And I didn't believe him at first. But 6 months later, after I met the guy, I'm sitting in this room that I'm in right now. This is my man cave at my home. And I was reading. I got up early in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I got my coffee and I got my Bible and began to read, and I began to pray. And I thought, you know what? It's the middle of December. There's not a lot I can do outside. I'm going to just see if I can figure out this copper scroll. Since I've been doing analytical stuff, investigative stuff for a few years, and is fairly decent at it. So I did. I sat down and listened to me. True story. Believe it, don't believe it, doesn't matter to me. Within 5 minutes, I knew how to understand the copper scroll.
Wow.
Within 15 minutes, I knew how to understand the first five locations, or 20 minutes. I knew how to understand the first five locations of the copper scroll. I found them that quick. And it's easy to understand the copper scroll once you get one key clue. Once you understand that one clue, then the document becomes very simple. And I wouldn't be so confident, but I took my research to the head of the Antiquities Authority. I took it to the head of the National Parks Authority. I took it to the head archaeologist for the National Parks Authority. And guys, every one of them said, oh my goodness. And they just literally put their hands on their forehead when they saw how simple it was. They've had this thing since 1952, and no one's been able to figure the thing out. And then a fireman from Lawton, Oklahoma shows up, and I said, well, dang, looky here, this ain't so hard, it's easy. And they got a kick out of that, because, you know, here's this guy from Oklahoma, out of nowhere, I can't speak Hebrew, I can speak, you know, fractured Hebrew. But I had been studying the Dead Sea Scrolls for so long, I knew all the ancient Hebrew letters. I knew it. So I could identify and recognize them. They're different from modern day Hebrew. Not a lot, but they're different enough that you have trouble, especially on the Copper Scroll. You have to understand these guys, there's a book called Emek HaMelek that talks about the Copper Scroll. Mm-hmm. It says that, listen to this. It says that five men wrote this copper scroll. And guys, you can see five handwritings on the copper scroll. Five men wrote it, and they're very different. I mean, the last five locations was written by the fifth writer of the copper scroll, and they're tiny little letters. When you go back to the middle of the copper scroll, you can see that it looks like some kid with a crayon pressed those letters into it. They're big, they're kind of gawky, and some of the letters are backwards. Some of the letters were, you know, it looks like they tried to erase it by pressing the letter back out of the copper. It's bizarre.
Wow.
But point being, there's five different handwritings, and now listen to who it was that wrote it. Two of them were prophets. It literally says that in Emek HaMelek, which means Valley of the King. It says that Haggai and the prophet and Zechariah the prophet, son of Edu, the prophet. So there's, when you look at the copper scroll, the facsimile of the copper scroll, you're looking at the handwriting of at least two prophets. It's incredible.
That's just mind blowing. It really is to me. So you figured out what it was, and I see so much of the Father in it because that's the way it works. You know, you found you were the guy, you know, and nobody else could explain it before then because it has to do with his timing. So you go to Israel and you have an exchange with a man by the name, I think his name is Shuka Dorfman. Let's pick it up there.
Yeah, Shuka was the head of the Antiquities Authority. I got introduced to him, listen, by a Comanche lady here in Lawton, Oklahoma. She ran the Comanche Nation College she was number two at the college. She came to me. She heard about my scroll. My research. She said, Jimmy, would you mind doing a brown bag luncheon and telling the staff here at the college about it? Which I did, which they loved, which she then called me after the presentation. She said, come into my office. We go in there and she said, Jimmy, I know somebody in Israel that could help you. And I'm looking at her thinking, how would a Comanche lady from Lawton, Oklahoma know somebody in Israel? And she said, She said, he was a international student from Israel going to the artillery training here at Fort Sill, which Fort Sill is the artillery capital of the world. And he was going to school there. Well, he was a lieutenant colonel, I believe, at the time, and they hosted him. Her husband, which was Jewish, and her, which was a Comanche, strange situation, they hosted the family and took care of them the entire time they were here at Fort Sill,
mm-hmm.
you know, to help right. them find her apartment, show them where to shop at, that kind of stuff.
Right.
They became best friends. Well, she just got on the phone that night. She didn't do it while I was sitting there, and she called Shuka. She said, Shuka, there's a young man in Israel, in Oklahoma, that you need to talk to. He's going to be in Israel in about 3 weeks. You need to talk to him. He agreed. 3 weeks later, I am sitting in the Citadel Hotel with Shuka Dorfman. He picked me up at our little hostel or hotel that we were at in downtown Jerusalem. Took me to the Citadel Hotel, overlooking the old city. And at first, you got to picture this. he asked me, Mr. Barfield, what can I do for you? I said, well, it's what I'm going to do for you. And he said, oh, that scares me. And he leaned back in his chair and he folded his arm in a very, you know, defensive positioning. And I said, do you understand what the copper scroll is? He said, of course I do. I said, well, good. I said, because I think I understand how to read it. And he looked at me and he kind of laughed and he just melted. I mean, just, oh my goodness. But he's still very much a gentleman, very kind. He said, well, Mr. Barfield, we're here. Let me see what you got. I slide my research over in front of him. Now, I want you to remember, he was leaning back in his chair with his arms folded with this kind of a really disappointed look on his face. But I showed him the first one. He sat up. Showed him the second one. He leaned forward. Showed him the third one. He was really leaning forward. And the fourth one, he pulled my research underneath his nose where he could get a good look at it. And after I showed him the fourth one, he stopped everything. He said, stop, Mr. Barfield, just a second. He reached in his bag, a leather bag, and he pulls out his cell phone, makes a phone call, and in Hebrew, he's telling this lady, he said, he tells her, make an appointment with Yitzhak Magen and Yuval Peleg. Tell them I need them in my office, and he looked at me. Now, he's talking in Hebrew, so I don't understand what he says, but I'll explain that in a second.
Right. Go ahead.
And he said, Jim, can you make it to come back to my office, on Tuesday? This was just before Shabbat in Israel. Wow. This was on a Friday afternoon.
Wow.
And I said, of course I can come back. Well, that's how it happened. Then I took I made a recording. I was an investigator, remember?
Right,
I recorded the conversation. I had my buddy Chris holding the microphone or the recorder, digital recorder, and he was recording it, and at the same time he was taking pictures of us sitting there looking at my research, so no one could ever deny this story.
Right.
And I'll stop here. Then, you know, he sets it up and we meet, and we had an amazing meeting with those guys on that Tuesday, and me and the archaeologist was sitting there. His name is Yuval Peleg. We hit it off, and listen to what he told Shuka Dorfman. He said in Hebrew, he said, I think this guy's done it, meaning he thought I figured out the copper scroll. And I took my recording then, and I go see this rabbi, and that very well-known rabbi in Israel, and I sat down with him, and he listened to the recording, and he's the one that told me everything that I just told you, because I couldn't understand the Hebrew.
Right.
That's how we really got started on this project back in 2008. So that's everything really kicked off.
Wow. That's pretty fantastic, but you can just see through all of this, you know, of how, you know, to convince the Jewish gentleman, you know, he's sitting back in his chair. I can picture that, you know, he's like, oh, you know, here's another one. You know what I mean? And,
oh yeah.
And just totally discounting you. And then in stages, he gets up out of his chair and puts it in front of his nose, you know, but you know, that's the fodder. And that's dramatic because, you know, these guys are hard to convince. One time, a few years back, I had a Jewish rabbi, you know, an Orthodox rabbi on my radio program, and I was trying to get something out of him about, you know, what was the major thing that he expected before Yeshua's return, before Messiah's return, not Yeshua, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it took me 3 weeks of radio program to talk to this guy. He covered everything up and down, everywhere he went, to get a simple answer out of him, and it was just fantastic. But finally we developed a relationship, you know, even though we came from different parts of the thing. But I just know how hard they are to convince of anything. So the father really had to be in this. Now, from here, we need to go out to, I guess the site would be the next place to go. We've got about about 3 minutes before break time. Or we can do this. You can take a couple of minutes and tell us what all's over at that Copper Scroll project, and then we can, you know, what all's over there and what do you got going on that people can look at?
You could go online to just any Google or search engine, Google doesn't matter, and just type in Copper Scroll Project, and it'll pop up to the top. And what and the people have to understand, I can't update every day. I can't update because a lot of the things that I there's things right now that I can't tell you, and I won't tell you because it's you know, we got to be careful about what we say. These are not pot shards. These are not, you know, fragments of scrolls. You're talking tons and tons of gold, tons and tons of equipment, bowls, cups, platters, that sort of thing. So there's a lot of stuff there, and if I make the wrong, if I say the wrong thing, I offend the Christians. If I say another wrong thing, I offend the Jews, and I'm always offending the Arabs. So, you know, there's nothing I can do. I've always got to be walking on eggs, careful about what I say and how I say it, because, you know, the Jewish people have a lot of good reason to be cautious.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I brought up to you before and on the way into this program, you know, about Netanyahu and annexing the Jordan Valley. I believe that's a critical thing in this, all in this timing of this. And I think it all has to do with timing, but I do understand the thing about offending. And for the record, we do have people that listen to us in the Middle East, you know, Amman Jordan among them, you know, and Israel. So, you know, we have to be careful. So, folks, you can check him out at copperscrollproject.com. Or, folks, when this program's over later tonight, this will post at our website and all over. And so any place this is tested on, many of the different podcasters that pick us up, the links will be included so you can go directly to his site. There's also a lot of YouTube videos out there that you can look around and see what this is about. And we got a lot more. He'll explain what the treasure is and a few other things when we come back in roughly about 4 minutes.
Go away, Pastor Dan will be right back.
I've got a story to tell you, a message to deliver it on. If you'll give an ear to these words I sing, passion for the lost will grow strong. As I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their souls and they don't know. Walking in darkness, they cannot see the road that they're on. It's broad and it entices them with pleasures, and further down that road they are drawn. And as I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. Every single day we have is one more chance to snatch a soul from entering hell. But don't you know these evil days are numbered? So get to work and do your job well. I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro. A burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their souls. that was on my heart. Now don't forget we haven't much time. The vineyard tribes have filled us wide, the workers are few. The harvest time is now in its prime. As I fix my eyes on humanity, watching as they run to and fro, a burden fills my heart and the time is short. They're soon to lose their souls. They know
at the time of creation, God ended his work after 6 days and he rested on the seventh day. At that time, he blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, made it holy. The fourth commandment, written in stone by the finger of God, states that the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord and instructs us to rest on that day. The only honest conclusion that can be drawn is that Sunday, the first day of the week, cannot possibly be the Sabbath. Could the days of the week have been changed over time? Is the time from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown really the seventh day? A careful study of chronology reveals that even though calendar changes have occurred, the order of the days of the week have stayed the same. The Julian calendar, originating in 46 BC, was replaced with the Gregorian calendar in 1582. What took place is that 10 days were taken from the number of the days in the month, not the number of the days in the week. Friday, October 5th, became Friday, October 15th. Calendar changes did not alter the days of the week or the order of the days. One must also remember that it is only necessary to check the calendars back to the time of Christ. He certainly knew which day the Sabbath was, for it was Jesus who created all things and instituted the observance of the Sabbath day. Yes, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. I'm Richard Reeves with Just the Facts.
For more information, contact Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227, or visit our website at www.toolong.com.
Welcome aboard. We're honored to be here tonight with Pastor Dan and Linda Catlin of Messiah's Branch, theprophecyhour.com. Would you all like to open us up in prayer tonight?
Well, folks, we're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. We're talking tonight about the Copper Scroll Project, and we're talking with Jim Barfield. But before we bring him on, just one little last word about the Wichita Mission Church. We just want you to pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church because we are the hope for so many, the last hope. Folks, we're all responsible to care one for another, as we are brothers keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps. And the fodder notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. You can donate online or over the phone or by mailing a check or money order. And you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com. And folks, also remember that this ministry, we sell nothing. Those commercials that you heard, those aren't ours. If you don't wish to help with the poor, consider a donation for radio airtime. It's not free, and donations keep us on the air. And now we're back with Jim, if Jim happens to still be there. He's still there, Jim.
You betcha. I'm still here.
Yeah, amen. Okay, just for clarification, you know, because some people had never heard of Copper Scroll. They are basically kind of like a treasure map to what specifically?
Yeah, it really is. It's a verbal treasure map. I mean, there's no drawings or anything like that on it. It's all directions, written directions in ancient Hebrew. And here's the ticket. Here's the key to this all. The other supporting documents in the Hamelech, the one that's Valley of the King, and there's some marble tablets from Beirut. All of them tell the same story. And even Second Maccabees tells a story about Jeremiah taking the treasures of the house, which, of course, the house would be the Beit HaMikdash or the temple, and taking all these implements, taking them down to the area of the Dead Sea Scrolls in that area. And on his way, he was on his way to Mount Nebo, and he takes these items and he puts them inside of a cave and he seals the cave. Well, that's the same thing that the Copper Scroll says. It explains that they took these items, very, very special holy items, and he seals them away inside of a cave. Only he calls it, on the Copper Scroll, they're called the all the treasures of the house. Not to mention, it talks about the treasures of, have you ever heard of the ephod? The ephod is the breastplate of righteousness that the high priest wore on the Day of Atonement. It talks about it specifically and says it that it's inside of this same cave that I'm telling you about. And the really neat thing about this, listen to this, the first three locations are in a perfectly straight line ascending up this hill, you know, about 338 meters from the ruins, the Qumran ruins.
Mm-hmm.
And the last five, that was the first three, and the last five are ascending in order up this hill in a perfectly straight line, and they end at the cave again. I'm telling you, it's like an Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's uncanny. Tonight, when I put this on, I'm going to put the short video I watched last night, that 30-minute one that you did was just dynamite. And I saw that on that video, and I'd seen it on the other ones, but that is just a perfectly straight line. It's also really amazing, the whole bit about, you know, how Quran is actually Jerusalem. They match up. But let's tell the folks about what happened. So everybody's thinking, well, if you found them, well, why didn't you go dig it up? Did you even make an attempt for the people? What happened?
Well, what happened was this. The gentleman that I was telling you about in the first story about me, Shuka Dorfman, Yitzhak Magen, and Yuval Peleg. Well, Yuval Peleg really was excited about what I had done, what I'd found. He made arrangements. He was with the Antiquities Authority, so he made the arrangements to go do an excavation in April of 2009. I was beyond myself excited. Here's this guy from Apache, Oklahoma, and now they're doing it, and they did it for free. They provided all the diggers. They provided the archaeologists. They provided everything. And all I had to do was go point at where I wanted them to dig, and I started at that cave. But here's what happened. There was a group, I believe it was in Colorado. I'm not going to name them yet, but I will eventually. They called and they raised Cain about Israel working and excavating based on the research of a fireman. They were furious, and they were complaining to the point that, you know, that they were going to cause them problems if they continued to excavate based on my research. Oh, it was ridiculous. I mean, here I've got the answer to this
right,
to this ancient puzzle, and they don't want me, a fireman from Oklahoma, to be the one to figure it out. So they complained till they shut us down. I mean, that day they shut us down. It was crazy.
Wow.
Same day that we were getting ready to do the, we needed to go at least 2 meters deep to see if the plaster, because I believe that the entrance to that cave is sealed shut with a stone masonry wall and then plastered over with a texture, a coating of it to seal it shut so no rain water could seep inside of that cave. Because if you're going to put the most precious items on the earth inside of a cave, you got to make sure it's a very dry and well-sealed cave. And it is. Matter of fact, Qumran is the driest place on earth. That place gets about a half an inch of rain per year, annual rainfall, and is just the driest place on earth. That's why the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, a few hundred yards away, were surviving for over 2,000 years. That's why. It's because it was so arid there, and in perfect conditions, if you got to have natural conditions, perfect natural conditions for the preservation of those kinds of documents.
Right, but you were you not able to, at some point, you did some kind of testing that showed there was things underground. You want to talk about that a little?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we, matter of fact, we tested one of the things, I'll tell you this first. We tested the concrete or the cement or the plaster that we found there at the cave. I sent it off to a group in Skokie, Illinois, professional scientific group. They tested that mortar, and guess what? And they told in a very careful way, they said, this is man-made mortar. But they worded everything, and then they took the next two or three pages to prove that what we had found was man-made mortar.
Right.
It was incredible. So there's another huge clue.
Right.
First three lining up, the last five lining up in a straight line. Not only that, but the description of the cave was exactly as it is on the copper scroll. And then we go out there, and I take this archaeologist by the name of Oren Gutfeld. Very nice guy. And I told him what I wanted to do. He said, let's do it. He said, I go out there all the time. I do work. I do testing. He said, I'm sure that I can get us a permit if you just want to scan. Which scanning, you go out there, you walk across the ground, you leave footprints, and you take pictures of the ground, under the ground. That's
right. What
happened. This metal detector that I had, we were getting permission to use, it's a very good metal detector. And guys, we had everything lined up, and they refused to let him do it. He said, Jimmy, I have never been turned down before, but remember, there was a guy by the name of Hananya Hizmi, the head of the ADCA, the Archaeological Department of the Civil Administration, which is over the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. There's nothing civil about it. It is a military operation. So, guys, he stopped it. He would not let us go any further with it. But I go to New York City. Now, I'm jumping forward in time here a little bit. I go to New York City. I was invited there by these Jewish group. And they wanted me to talk to a gentleman by the name of Moshe Feiglin. Moshe Feiglin met me. We met in New York, and I showed him my research. He loved it. He said, why have you not dug these things up? And I said, because your government will not let me. And he said, are you kidding me? I said, no, I'm not kidding. He said, you know what? I am the deputy speaker of the Knesset in Israel. I have diplomatic immunity. I will do the scan. You just walk with me and show me how to do it. I will scan it because they can't arrest me.
Wow.
And I said, okay.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, because I've never done anything illegal in my life.
Right.
And it wasn't illegal for me to have done it, and me to the guys who walk out there and to have done it on our own, that would have been worthy of going to jail. However, he truly had diplomatic immunity. Even the archaeologist that I talked to over there said, yeah, he's right. He's got that right is to do this kind of thing without all that red tape. We did it. We tested it. Tested five locations. And guys, the five locations were off the charts. We tested there's a treasury there. If you ever go to Israel, listen, go to Qumran. Go out there. It looks like just a bunch of, you know, little stubby walls sticking up out of the ground. But I promise you, that location is going to be one of the most, or the most important place in Israel other than the Temple Mount. It'll be number two only to the Temple Mount, because you mentioned something earlier that that it needs to be told, and bring me back to this test because I want to tell you more about it.
I will. Go ahead.
Here's what happened. I was looking for a map of a map of Jerusalem at the time of Jeremiah. I needed it because Jeremiah is at the center of all this. And, you know, the big shot PhD boys will argue with me till heck freezes over. And I don't care. And with all due respect, there's a lot of other really wonderful PhD boys that are behind me, even in secret, calling me saying, hey, don't give up. Hang in there. And here's the thing. I found this map of Qumran at the time of Jerusalem, a map of Jerusalem at the time of Jeremiah, and I looked at it. Now, listen, I looked at that map, and I thought, why in the world did these guys draw Qumran upside down? Now, this is Jerusalem. I said, why did they draw Qumran upside down? Because, and so I rotated it, and I thought, that's Qumran. It wasn't, guys. It was Jerusalem. Wow. For whatever reason, they built Qumran to be identical to Jerusalem as far as the outer features, all the major features where the towers were at. It's where the largest tower is at, where the woman's house is at. It's where they fed the women at Qumran, women and children at Qumran, the treasury. There's a double entry mikveh at Qumran. You know what a mikveh is, I'm sure.
Right.
A baptismal. That mikveh has got two entries to it. Well, if you go to Jerusalem, if you go to the museum in Jerusalem and you look at the city of Jerusalem at the time of King Herod or Yeshua or Jesus, if you look at it, you see a double entry mikveh in exactly the same spot that this mikveh is at Qumran. If you made a miniature Jerusalem and out in the wilderness, that's what this is. It's like a miniature in the wilderness Jerusalem. And it's the same place. Everything matches up. That where the Temple Mount is matches exactly where the Teacher of Righteousness, where his room was at, which he represented, that spot represented the temple on there. It just goes on and on.
Right.
So
yeah, let me interrupt for a second. You know, you and folks, I want you to watch this video. I'm going to send a link to, and I know a lot of people have a hard attention span, but it's a 30-minute video, and I'm going to add it with the other links that I'm going to send out tonight. But all of Jim, you pointed that out, and it just totally blew me away. There's no way of denying what this is. Back to you.
You would think there is, but there are people that try. It's ridiculous. And you know, I look at it. Now, let me give you a little bit more about Qumran.
Okay.
Listen, guys, ladies and gentlemen in the audience, if you've ever wondered about the Melchizedek order, if you've ever wondered about that, Qumran was the home of the Melchizedek order. It is incredible. Not only that, but we don't have time tonight, but I could go into a long rendition of information about the Melchizedek order. When, you know, a few years ago, it was just almost totally secret what this order was. And it's not a complicated issue. But to back that back up now, and let's go back to Qumran and to the, how do I know that if there are those, that testing that we did, and this is all tied together, we're kind of bundling it quickly, but I believe it's there because of the testing. The results were off the charts on that doggone, metal detector. It was just amazing. So that, you tie that and you link that to the Melchizedek order. You link that to Jerusalem and Qumran being mirror images of each other. And yet, and I like I said, we could spend the next 3 hours sitting here, which, you know what, if you don't mind me doing so, there is a show coming on TBN. TBN, it's called In Grace by Jim Scudder. there's going to be a show coming on at approximately, oh gosh, I'll have to, may have to get back with you on that so I can get the exact
time. Let's go with this. We still got a couple minutes now. Relax a second. You tell us all about it, what you want us to know, and I will give the update back out to the folks and send it out as to time or whatever. So don't worry about that, brother. Just go ahead and tell us what you want. And I was going to ask you about this anyway because you brought it up to me when we talked earlier. So go right ahead. We got about 6 minutes or something.
Yeah, this gentleman named Jim Scudder from TBN, they did a three-part series on the Copper Scroll Project. And they're going to be showing it on there. And I encourage people to watch it because Shelley was actually there when they were doing some filming, and she got to walk around and show them some spots. Now, she normally doesn't get to do that because the research is mine. She did the book. She wrote the book, and I give her all the credit for that. But the research, normally, I don't let anyone else touch that because I'm trying to keep control of it for a dozen different reasons. But she did. Yeah, and I have to. So that's what that show is. We've got another show that'll be coming on in October. It's called In Search Of. You ever heard of it?
Sure, I have.
Yeah, In Search Of did a story on me just in May time frame, and we stayed out there for a couple of days filming, and I think it's going to be on the 25th of October, and for. It's
right.
Guys, I would encourage everyone to watch these shows. I don't get any money out of this, and I'm not getting any money out of this, but I want everybody to know that these things are coming on. In September, the 17th of September, that one should be an easy one to remember because there's a very important election coming up on the 17th of December. You've mentioned it a couple of times here. That is another thing that's important. Then there's another one, but I can't release that one yet. It's another major network that did that's doing a program about the Copper Scroll Project. So it's almost like it's exploding here all of a sudden. Now let's go to the prophecy side of the house, if you don't mind.
Love to.
The prophecy side of the house is this. You were right. You said earlier, what about this, annexing of the West Bank? Guys, if they annex it, then it's going to take Qumran off of the plate because anything found in the West Bank right now is up for grabs between Jordan, Palestinians, and Israel. Israel does not want anything from that cave. If let's say that they really do know about it, they're not going to want anything come out of that cave until after they get full control of it. Guys, here's Trump going, whether you love him or hate him, he is opening some serious doors for archaeology and for Israel to take back over and be the nation it's always supposed to have been. And this just screams Messiah all over it. And I'm not saying he's Messiah, I'm not saying that at all. But the coming of the Messiah, it's incredible what's developing in the Middle East right now, what's developing in Israel. So if I'm right, and if I really did find all these artifacts, what do you think is going to be inside of that cave along with, and listen, the tabernacle of Moses? It says that in Second Maccabees. It says the tabernacle of Moses, the altar of incense, table of showbread, and guess what? Yes, the Ark of the Covenant, they said, is inside of that same cave. That is enormous.
Well,
let me
say this just for a second. The Ark of the Covenant. Now, I don't remember who it was. I'm getting older, I guess, 64. But I was talking to somebody not long ago, and they came across with the admission there was, you know, some big people in that are talking about rebuilding the temple and everything, you know, Jewish rabbis or whatever. And they admitted that they absolutely know where the Ark of the Covenant is. And so, you know, they shrugged it off as a no big deal because they really know where it's at. So here you go, maybe back to you.
Well, I tell you what, the gentleman that I told you about that was listening to the recording that we did of Shuka Dorfman and Yuval Pelleg, guess what? he plays a major role in that whole thing. And I showed him where these locations were at as well. In case anything would have ever happened to me, he would have had those locations so they could bring these things out even without me. Because it's not about me being the guy to discover it. It's about God getting the glory, and God must get the glory. And I mean, if I'm really, truly right and all these locations that I'm talking about are right, I have to give God the credit, all the glory, because, I mean, I was a good investigator, but I wasn't that good. I mean, within, you know, since 1952, no one could figure it out. And then I sit down at my desk, 5 o'clock in the morning, and 20 minutes later, I've got the first five figured out. That's God.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's just really awesome.
Absolutely.
So I'll stop there and let you ask more questions.
Well, you've answered a lot. Let's go with this. So, I know they're going to have to grab a hold of it, but have you any plans on so you're staying involved. Do you think that they will involve you if they dig it up?
I certainly hope so. You know what? We don't want anything. We want to do our part in the ushering in the time of the Messiah. I mean, the guys that are working with me, they don't care about money. They could care less about the gold and silver. It's about knowing that our Messiah is knocking on the door.
Yeah,
he's coming soon, and that's what's important. It's not about us, but yes, I do. You better believe it. I want to be there when these things come up, and I think the guys and I have earned that right to sit there and watch those things come out of that cave. Can you imagine? Can you imagine sitting there in the sun, gleaming and glistening off of the Ark of the Covenant into the open for the first time in over 2,000 years?
Yeah.
And would have a front row seat, and that would be wonderful.
That's heart-stopping things. That's heart-stopping. You know, it's just like, you know, a fulfillment of all things. Because, you know, it's always one thing to, you know, read the Bible and believe it by faith, but to see things like that, and you know what I'm saying? That's just stopping. You know, I have, just so you know, I did put a email out to Shelley to get her to come on and talk about her book. I hope that's okay with you.
And you know what? She and I worked on that book together. Of course, I had to live the life, and I had to provide her with all the details, but she did an amazing job on the book. And have you got a copy of the book?
No, I haven't got it yet. I'd love to have a copy.
Well, send me your address and on the text or email, and I will send you a signed copy of it. I'll sign it, and I'll send it to you if you'd like one.
I'd love one. And you know what? I'm a book guy. I keep all the books. I try to get a book from everybody I, you know, talk to. But so, yeah, that'd be a great thing for me. Thank you.
It's a very well written. Go on Amazon and look it up and look at the ratings on it, or the, what do they call it? Five, it's gotten about 99% of them are 5-star.
Wow.
And there's like 50 of them on there now. So there's a lot of people that really enjoyed the book. She did a wonderful job.
Well, amen. Well, brother, it's been good to talk to you. I'm going to have to be letting you out of here, but, you know, maybe we can talk again about this, and I'd love to hear about the Melchizedek, because, you know, I've been looking for some more accurate information on him. So if maybe a blessing, you'll come back and talk again.
I would be loved to. I'd love to share that information with you guys.
All right. Well, thanks for being on with me, and goodbye and be blessed. Shalom to you, my brother.
Shalom, shalom. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, folks, that was Jim Barfield, and you got to look at the research. You got to look at the video I'm going to send you out. You got to get the book. I'm going to try and get Shelley Neese. I asked her to come on and talk. Maybe when she finds the time that she'll do that, and she'll talk about the book. And from her perspective of all of this, because she does, she talks really good about Jim, so we're going to try and have her on. So pray about it. Pray about supporting Wichita Mission Church. We're just coming out of summer, and we really do need your help. And wintertime's here, so we need all sorts of things. Pray about it. And don't forget radio airtime. You enjoy these programs, we need your help to stay on the air. pray about a donation today. But remember, there is only one true God. He is your Father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins, and he rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That is praying for Yeshua's return. Lord our God, Father, King of the universe, asking Yeshua HaMashiach's name, Father, that you would bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, and that you would be gracious to them, and that you would give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom. And hey, it's Carl Gallup's day. Bye-bye.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.